reflecting on what the Word has to say about this topic of rest. And I don't know about you, but I felt kind of myself just taking a little breath in just then to remember the goodness of this idea of rest. So my name is Matt, one of the pastors here at CPE, and I want to welcome everyone along this morning, particularly if there's some dads along, you're along with your family here. Love having you along here. You know, we love opening up God's Word because there's just some beauty in it that brings us something that we need, and I think rest definitely fits into that space, doesn't it? See, I actually love hearing about people's perfect day off. I reckon it actually says quite a lot about who you are when you think about your day off. For me, my day off would probably start early. I'm not much for sleeping in unless I'm really sick. I'd probably start with maybe a bit of a jog, a bit of time outdoors, and a good hearty breakfast involving bacon. A bit of time outdoors with the family, bushwalk, the beach, climbing a mountain, something like that would be great. Followed, of course, there's got to be food. You know, I think a day off wouldn't be right without some amazing food, maybe some fresh seafood or a great barbecue for lunch, and an afternoon of sports or board games or a good movie maybe, something like that. For me, probably some quirky, non-mainstream movie, knowing me. But you know what? I love thinking and dreaming about your day off. I think it says a lot about you. And in truth, I reckon if we surveyed, you know, all 150 people here today, you would get 150 different days off, wouldn't you? Everyone's got a bit of a different picture, a bit of a different dream, a bit of a different hope about what a really good, relaxing, rejuvenating day off would look like. And that's good, and that's the right thing. And what feels like work for one person might actually be rest for another person. If you're an introvert or an extrovert, that might have a big play on your day off. Are you an active or more of a kind of a passive person? Are you indoorsy or outdoorsy? Is spending time with your kids, is that work or is that rest? But I actually think in some ways, maybe even the harder question though for us to be thinking about is, when was the last time you genuinely felt like you had that day of rest? When was the last time you can actually go, that wasn't just a dream, actually I was able to go out and have that day that felt just so beautiful and rich and rejuvenating for me and who I am and all those things or whatever it might have looked like for you. And think about that. Why is it that all those dreams, that something that would seem to be so inherently good and part of who we are, is something that is so fleeting or difficult to grasp hold of? Why is it that work particularly seems to intrude upon that space? That the never-ending list of demands from family, from bosses, from technology, from everything. Why is it that there's always more pressure to study more, get more work done on the assignments, be better prepared for the exams? Why is it that our smartphone seems to kind of constantly demand more and more of us, and yet we always feel a little bit less and less fulfilled and less energized afterwards? Well, friends, that's the question that we're going to be wrestling with today. This idea of rest that would be so fleeting and so difficult to grasp hold of and yet seemingly so vital to be a part of who we are. You see, I don't think we could do a series on work without really dealing with this issue of rest, because it seems that work and rest, they very much go together. There we go. And you know, the whole title of this series is Thank God It's Monday. Right, we've been pushing this idea that actually, you know, when you rock up on Monday, that is part of the work God has given you to do. There is a value and a dignity to it, and that we hope that you go to work with a spring in your step out of an opportunity to love and serve people around you and to love and serve our world. But you might have realized this, that it's a bit of a play on words, isn't it? Because the phrase that you hear out there is actually, thank God it's Friday. Thank God it's Friday. What's that expressing? Well, that's kind of expressing this idea that work is a drain and a bore, and really, we should be living for the weekend. So, like, thank God it's Friday because that means the weekend is here and I can go and do something fun. I can go and live a life of leisure for a couple of days before you get back to the grind again on Monday. So, friends, what is true rest? What does it look like? Is it living for work or living for the weekend? Or is it something else altogether? Now, here at CPU, we believe the Bible has something really important to say about actually who we are as human beings and the world that we live in. And so when we think about work and when we think about rest, well, the first place that we go to is Genesis, isn't it? Genesis. Because in Genesis, there's a description not just about how God created the world, but actually the purpose and the reason for it. That we're not just an act of random chance of physics and chemistry, but that we're actually wonderfully and purposely made for something. And that God had a picture in mind of the role that we would play in the world. See, what happens towards the end of the description of the creation story? What does God say? Well, he looks back at all his work from 6 days and he says this: God saw all that he had made and it was very good. And there was evening and there was morning, the sixth day. Thus the heavens and the earth were completed in all their vast array. Right, at this point, everything is good. 6 days of creation, 6 days of work. God made everything. It was beautiful. It was great. It was very good. But there's one more day. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he had been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. Then God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. See, right at the beginning, God actually sits back and God rests. This is the God, the omnipotent God who can create, literally he can create the universe with a few words. And on the seventh day, he stops and he rests. Now, this is not just an idea there in Genesis. Actually, this idea is carried on then as a description, not just of what God did there in creation, but actually of what humans are to follow in his footstep. That actually we should stop and we should take a moment to rest there's a peace and satisfaction that we can get to the end of the working week and look back and delight in all our work and to rest. Now, in the Old Testament, this was instituted into the Ten Commandments as the idea of the Sabbath, the idea of the Sabbath. Here's a description of it in Exodus. Remember the Sabbath by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you, nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigner residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea, and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore, the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Now you see there right here in the start of the Bible is very much instituted this idea of 6 days of work and a day of rest. And it's not just a thing that God did there in Genesis, but it's actually something that his people are to follow. The pattern of 6 days, get all your work done, 1 day to rest. In fact, God makes that day holy to be a day for God, a day in which he blesses. And that's not just for you, but for everyone around you, your servants and even your animals. Now, we'll come back to this idea of the Sabbath shortly, but I want us just to stop and think about that for a moment. That instituted into all of creation was this idea that we were supposed to stop our work and rest. You see, in lots of ways, I see it like this. I see it as a recognition of our limits. Like, we're not omnipotent like God. We're not the all-powerful creating God. And yet, God takes rest. He takes a day of rest, to delight in the work of his creation. So why is it that so many of us struggle to genuinely have a day off for rest? Why is it that so many of us think that we're stronger than God, perhaps? Maybe we push ourselves harder than even God asks us to? Why is it that so many of us get to the end of the week and go, oh man, I just wish I had one extra day in the week to get my stuff done? You know what I mean? How many of us do feel like that? Right? You ever fantasize the idea that maybe if you could just work harder, work faster, or more efficiently, maybe if you were just this absolute productivity machine, that then life would be good because you could get more work done in the time of your week. See, we looked at the problem with that mentality a couple of weeks ago, but every time we think about that, I think in lots of ways we taking on this idea that maybe we could be like God. We could be this omnipotent creating person. We rail against our limitations. But rest recognizes our limits, recognizes that we are not the creator, recognizes that as God rested, so we need rest. And let's be real here, statistically, we're doing pretty terribly at it. You know, a lot of the signs in our world and society, and to be honest, we could probably tick off a bunch of these for yourself, couldn't you? Stress, anxiety, all-time high. Something like 3 to 4 in 5 workers report a high amount of work-related stress. A lot of us might experience that as fatigue, difficulties with sleep, irritability, emotional ability. We make mistakes at work. Actually, it's been shown that the less you rest, the worse your productivity gets. See, let me ask you, do you see yourself in those statistics? Do you recognize your own addiction to achievement and success and the way that that affects you? Now, some of us will point to that and go, oh, yeah, but my work is demanding. It's not really my choice of the particular role or career I'm in or whatever it is, the boss that I have. And yes, there is a part of that that might be thrust upon us rather than something that we can kind of feel like we've opted into. Nevertheless, we need to stop and reflect and think about it. Is this the kind of life that God calls me to? Now, I want to kind of think one further step, okay? Because rest isn't just because we need it, isn't just because God instituted it as a pattern built into creation itself. I'm going to suggest to you that it's also why a day of rest is an act of worship. It's an act of worship. Now, the Ten Commandments appears twice in the Old Testament. The second time around is interesting because of the way that it expressed there about the Sabbath. Right? See, what do you see there? It's pretty much the same except for that extra verse, verse 15. See, observe the Sabbath. Why? Remember that you were slaves in Egypt and that the Lord your God brought you out of there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God has commanded you to observe the Sabbath day. In other words, rest is protection from slavery. The Sabbath was meant to be a moment to worship, an act of worship towards a God who freed you out of slavery, to help you remember, lest you ever become so big-headed that you become those who would enslave others. Or perhaps it's a reminder that maybe sometimes we enslave ourselves to our work, to our achievement, to our desire for success. And this is a moment to worship and remember that God saved us from slavery, saved us from the harsh conditions of the world, of the Egyptians who pushed the Israelites harder and harder and harder and made their life harder. I think that also helps us because it shows us that there's something different between living for rest as the way that God would think about rest and the way that maybe our world thinks about rest. See, I think the whole living for the weekend thing, you know, thank God it's Friday, it's very much a go out and now go and find your own self-fulfillment in your leisure pursuits and recreation and sort of that. And that's part of the picture. That's part of the picture. But actually, the picture of the Sabbath is much more fuller, it's much more rounded. It's an aspect of worship. It's an aspect of remembering the God who saved you, who freed you for a life of worship, of work, yes, and of rest. Now, these commandments were given thousands of years ago, okay? Thousands of years ago. I think that means we've got something to learn from the Jews. We have a lot to learn from the Jews as people who've been practitioners of this idea of the Sabbath for centuries now. Now, the Jews, they will call it their Shabbat, which for them goes from Friday sunset through to Saturday sunset, okay? Friday sunset to Saturday sunset. Now, what does it actually look like? Well, there's a whole bunch of things that the Jewish Shabbat would look like. And you would, you know, if you ever visit Jerusalem, particularly the very more traditional parts of Jerusalem, you would see this played out on a societal level. You could probably even go to like Bondi or other parts of Australia with high Jewish populations and see some of this at work. But the Jewish Shabbat would look like this. On Friday, there'd be this flurry of activity. Now, why is there a flurry of activity? Well, in large part, it's because it's about preparation for the Shabbat. That is, to get things done, preparation, food, meals cooked. There's a flurry of activity that happens over that Friday to kind of get that all done, so that come sunset, there would be this moment, the streets empty out. People head indoors, right? The city would turn to a ghost town, and people would be on foot everywhere, right? They would be on foot walking to synagogues, right? Where they would come alive with songs and prayers and blessings. Then the families afterwards would then gather for a little festive meal, wine, bread, traditional food, family, friends. It would often be by candlelight. And be this, it wouldn't be this dour religious kind of affair, but actually really lively and filled with music. It's a celebration. Then on Saturday, the businesses would be all completely closed. Public transport would be shut down. Some will be up again for morning prayers at the synagogue. People would be just, what were they doing? They're just walking the streets. They're outdoors. They would go over and visit their friends, visit their families, be walked down to the park, just spending time together out there in creation, enjoying it. There's no technology. There's no kind of sitting on computers and smartphones, because even the technology is supposed to rest. Then the Shabbat ends with a ceremony involving lighting a special candle, smelling fragrant spices, a ritual known as a Havdalah. And after Havdalah, people return to their routines, the idea being to be renewed and refreshed and to be kind of sent out again. Now, I don't know about you, that feels very foreign to me, but also very alluring in its own way, right? There's kind of something to it. There's something about stopping and resting, not just individually, but actually societally and with others and spending time with your friends and your family and having good food. In fact, to be honest, the last time I can even think about this sort of thing happening on a broader level was, honestly, it was almost like lockdown 2020. So I don't know if you kind of remember that. Like, there was this moment it was all kind of shock and horror and we were locked in our houses. But there was sort of that period afterwards where you were sort of still supposed to be home generally, but you're allowed to go out to the parks and things and walk around outdoors, and no one was really working. I mean, a few people kind of working from home, but mostly if you just went to the park, and I remember this in my suburb, you'd just be at the park and literally everybody was there, like people I hadn't seen before. And there was families out there together with their kids and their scooters and they're walking the dog, and because that's kind of all you're allowed to do. We were forced to stop and to rest. Now, I think there should be something there, right? There's something there to grasp hold of. There's something there that was good, just good and healthy for the human soul to stop and rest and invest in relationships. When we think about this theologically, scripturally, we see at the root of it is a God who rests from his work of creation. And he invites us into his rest, to share in his rest, to delight in his creation, to be part of our worship of him. You see, I think that the foundation of all rest is spiritual rest. That that's actually the fact that God institutes us into our world and makes us a part of our worship to him. It's our spiritual rest. But then upon the foundation of that spiritual rest, I think there's a whole bunch of other rests that we can think of that would be really helpful and good for us. Physical rest. All of us maybe don't have as physically demanding jobs anymore, but there's still something right about physical rest, attending to ourselves, attending to our bodies. See, for me, that would actually, maybe for me, it actually involves a bit of exercise and sport and that sort of thing. Intellectual rest, the rest from striving to know more. And this is actually a big one for me because I'm a bit of an intellectual. I love a good book, a stimulating podcast. It's not uncommon for me to have, you know, be kind of reading, having two or three books on the roll at the same time as a podcast going, just kind of learning and taking in as much as I can. And so I need intellectual rest. I need a moment to switch my brain off from knowing, from learning. Social rest. Right? It's the rest from the effort of keeping up appearances, you know, putting up the good face all the time. Not all people are created equal for us. There are people who will energize you and people who will drain you. There are introverts and there are extroverts. And so that rest might look different for us. Now, I think true rest will involve some people for us. But not all social situations will be created equal. Maybe actually your rest involves just the people that really energize you. Maybe for you, it's actually going out and having fun with some people that you otherwise wouldn't get to have fun with. In our rest, we actually give our total presence to those around us. What about emotional rest? You know, some of us, maybe we need to kind of set aside our big feelings and let them rest for the day. Or for others, maybe you actually need to take a moment to stop and reflect and to feel something because you're sort of so preoccupied with work and study and other things, they actually don't take time to kind of stop, reflect, and feel. And this last one, I think, is a massive one in our modern day, sensory rest or digital rest. I kind of lump them together because I think they're very similar. The rest from stimulation, from all the kind of digital screens and things that just seem to fill our lives. Now, to kind of put some of this together for you, let me just talk you through what a day off looks like at the Fongs. So I'm thinking about this from a week ago. We sort of roughly aim from Friday dinner to Saturday dinner, mainly because Sunday for us is really a day of work as someone involved in ministry, and that's a very busy on-the-go day. But on Friday, we try to kick off our rest with a good meal and a prayer together to give thanks to the God who saved us and freed us from sin and death and Satan. And to give Bonnie a rest, usually I'll cook or we might be takeout. Last Friday it was steak and snags done over the coals. See, cooking for some might be work. Cooking over coals with some meat for me, that's definitely in the rest category, right? Definitely in the rest category. Now, sometimes we might light a candle and do that sort of thing and read some scripture. This night we actually lit up the fire pit out in the backyard and cooked some marshmallows. Saturday morning, I'm up early for a jog, though usually everyone else has a good sleep in. Then it's waffles and maple syrup or Nutella on top for the kids, and just a delight in God's provision for us that way. Now, that particular morning, we went for a time outdoors. We went out to South Bank, right, for a bit of a scoot, a bit of a play at the playground there along the river, just enjoying creation with a lunch over pizza and pasta at one of our favorite Italian places. The afternoon was pretty nice and relaxed. Sometimes it's a board game, sometimes a family movie, sometimes we'll go out for a ride to the park, or sometimes we'll pull out the Switch for some games together. Then dinner will be something nice and simple, maybe some takeout if that's easier. And then Saturday night, you know, for me will often be a bit of preparation for the Sunday. Now, you might notice we don't have too many people involved with that, and that's partly because Bonnie's an extrovert and I have a very person, people-heavy job. And so, but that's something that, you know, we kind of like to build into in time. Now, I share that with you not to recommend as though your day of rest should look the same as our day of rest. You're different. Your spouse, your family might be different. Your day off should look more uniquely you. If you want some more ideas, Emily shared a little about her and Enrique's day off on the podcast. You can go look that one up as well. Now, your Sabbath could be a Saturday, or maybe it's actually a Sunday, as Christians are traditionally done. In lots of ways, I think the actual day doesn't matter, but the idea is that you would take a 24-hour period in your week that would be for rest, whatever that looks like for you. Now, I forgot to flick up the photos there. But anyway, let me give you a few reflections on rest, A day off is not a day to catch up on all the other errands and housework and other things that might have been left undone from the week, okay? I think that's not truly a day of rest. In fact, for a lot of people, a day of rest might, well, you know, in your weekly schedule, it might be 5 days at your workplace, a day to kind of get your home and house stuff done, and then a day that is truly set aside for rest. Secondly, mums need a day off. Mums need a day off. In fact, my observation, and sometimes a struggle in our household too, that it seems like mums are the ones who carry the burden during the week, and then mums are the ones carrying the burden on the weekends too, so that maybe everyone else can have some time off and a bit of fun. actually, mum needs time off too. Now, there'll be certain things that mum can't take a day off. You know, if you've got a three-month-old, you're never going to stop feeding them for a day. You're still going to be kind of doing certain things. But you might be thinking and planning for how you can give your wife a day off. For us, sometimes it involves actually having cleaners. We get cleaners who come in on the Thursday so that come Friday, actually, things are pretty calm. The house feels kind of not a big mess, and we can feel like we can relax. But let me say also that for some people, it takes a lot of practice to have a day off. It can take a lot of practice for a day. It can be actually really hard to stop doing things. See, I think that can come up for a lot of reasons. The anxiety about the tasks that are left unfinished. Do you ever have that where you kind of go, I really want to have a day off, but I kind of got all these, I feel really guilty, or I feel really anxious about all these other things, and it's like, so I'm just going to take the half day to kind of quickly finish those things off. Sometimes you feel guilty because you feel like you haven't earned the day off. Sometimes you feel guilty because you feel like you've wasted so much time during the week that when you were meant to be working, that you don't really deserve a day off. Some of us have difficulty just letting go, that we're so kind of a little bit hyperactive and to stop and to have stillness and reflection and spend time with people and be present with people is actually really hard. I want to say to you, if you feel any of those things, this is not a reason to skip your day off. It might be actually more of a reason to have a day off. It might be more of a reason to force yourself to kind of get into the practice of it. I want to say that you might need to commit to doing this for several weeks in a row before you kind of start, your body just starts to actually relax on your day off. And friends, let me say this. God never makes you earn your rest. God gives you that rest. Our God is a gracious and merciful and giving God. And sometimes we don't allow ourselves to stop. We don't allow ourselves to actually just accept the gracious gift of rest from our God who gives us rest. You see, in lots of ways, it's like the ultimate act of faith where you stop and you let go of your control over everything. That maybe not everything is perfect in the house, for the kids, for your study, for your assignments. But you let it go and you trust God. See, I think a lot of us might just have a really good conversation with our spouse, with our family, about what looks like rest for them. Maybe you need to have a chat with some friends about what rest looks like. And maybe you can build some kind of picture or vision of rest together with your friends. Well, friends, so far we've mostly engaged with the Old Testament and the picture of the Sabbath there in the Old Testament, but what about the New Testament? What about the New Testament? Because you might hear it said that sometimes because Christ has abolished the law, that you no longer need to take a Sabbath. You no longer need to take a day off. And to be honest, there's probably a part of my younger Christian walk where I kind of sort of believe that, you know? But actually, I think it's both theologically and practically wrong. Let me tell you why. Here's a couple of verses from the New Testament about rest and the Sabbath. Romans 14. One person considers one day more sacred than another, and another considers every day alike. Each of them should be fully convinced in their own mind. Whoever regards one day as special does so to the Lord. Whoever eats meat does so to the Lord, for they give thanks to God. And whoever abstains does so to the Lord and give thanks to God. See, this idea that Paul is talking about is that, and I think in the early church, I can imagine that it was a real wrestle between the Jewish Christians who took the day off on the Saturday and the Gentile Christians who maybe took the day off on the Sunday. And they would have fights and debates about it. And Paul says, who cares which day you have off? Maybe you consider one day as the sacred holy day, and maybe someone else considers another day. The idea is that what? You give it to the Lord. You do it for God. And you give thanks to God in that. In fact, Colossians 2:16 takes it even further. He says, therefore, do not let anyone judge you by what you eat or drink or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day. These are a shadow of the things that were to come. The reality, however, is found in Christ. See, Paul argues here is not that the Sabbath is done away with because Christ has come, He's saying that Christ is the fulfillment of the Sabbath, the walking embodiment of eternal rest that the Sabbath points us to. See, the issue in Paul's day was the restrictive legalism of the Pharisees, right? Who made so many laws about what you can and can't do on the Sabbath that it lost its life-giving and replenishing healing power. See, it wasn't about going out and being able to do all the things that would really re-energize you. It became about trying to avoid doing all the things that the Pharisees said that you can't do. All these kind of, they had hundreds, literally hundreds of things to literally codify everything about what you can't do. They were the literal fun police. And if your day off kind of turns into a whole thing of trying to avoid everything because you don't want to do something wrong to upset someone, then that is no longer a day off. That is a day of work for you. That is a day of religious work. But what does Paul say? Christ comes. He gives us a reality of that rest. He gives us the picture of perfect spiritual rest by the one who comes, who sheds his blood for us, so that in God's eyes we are perfectly holy, that we have nothing to prove, nothing to earn, nothing left to achieve or to do in God's eyes, that you can rest in that. And so he says, don't let someone judge you about all the things that you can't do on your day of rest. He says, go and just enjoy your day of rest. Enjoy it in light of the fulfillment of it in Christ. And I think you really see that in that passage that Bonnie did read out earlier about the Sabbath and about Jesus' encounter with the Pharisees in Mark chapter 2. See, one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields, and as his disciples walked along, they began to pick some heads of grain. The Pharisees said to him, look, why are they doing what is unlawful on the Sabbath? He answered, have you never read what David did and when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and he ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he also gave some to his companions. Then he said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. So the Son of Man is Lord even of the Sabbath. Jesus asserts his authority on the Sabbath because the Pharisees would rather people starve than break one of their laws that they've made up about the Sabbath. The Sabbath rest under the Pharisees was like people having to serve these rules rather than people going to go and enjoy rest, that the Sabbath was given for man, not the other way around. Now, what actually happens is the very next day, Jesus goes and heals a man. He goes and heals a man on the Sabbath. And the Pharisees debate about whether that's a right thing to do, to go and actually do some good on the Sabbath. I think there's something for that in us. I think Jesus means to heal us on our day off. That in all the rigors of our work or our study or our family, that there would be a day in which we recover by worshiping our God together. A day in which we would put our work aside and just enjoy being with people. That we would do those things that are fun and rejuvenating for us that we might not otherwise have got a chance to do during the week. See, Tim Keller coined a phrase that was really, really helpful. He said that there is a work beneath our work. Right? It's the work that maybe is striving to justify ourselves or to achieve or so that others would look up to us. I think alongside with that is this idea that I reckon also that there is a rest beneath our rest. That's actually the fact that we've got a God who loves us, who has given us rest, who has sent his son to die for us so that we can be completely justified in his sight so that we can spiritually rest. And if that rest is there behind our rest, it should free us to be able to go and take that time off, to do it completely guilt-free, to do it trusting that there is omnipotent God who is holding everything up for us so that we can let go. See, I think, church, there is so much more than just living for the weekend or living for leisure pursuits. I think rest is living to rest and worship the living God. And then taking that rest and blessing all those around us. that we would stop and spend time with them and enjoy things with them. See, church, I hope that you can say, thank God it's Monday. And I hope that you can say, thank God it's Friday or Saturday or Sunday or whatever day off that you might have. See, our problem is not the problem of the Pharisees, too many rules that have become impressive. I think in our days, we have too few things to define our day of rest. We've lost the uniqueness of having that day off. And church, I hope that this sermon is a word of encouragement, particularly for those of you who are really struggling right now, struggling to take that day off, terrified that you haven't done enough, ashamed that maybe you didn't do more this week, and you find yourself just pleading to God, oh, just give me another day, God, to get everything done. Then I'll be able to take time off. See, the truth is, you probably haven't done enough. In fact, you can probably never truly do enough to be in control and charge of everything because you're not God. The good news of the gospel is this. All that doesn't matter because God, in his grace and his mercy in Christ, has done it all for you. Friends, your work, your efficiency, your productivity can add nothing to your standing before God. And that is good news right there. That is the good news of the gospel. That is the rest upon which you can build a true life of rest for yourself and for your family. So church, in a moment, I'm going to invite you to take part in the Lord's Supper. Now, the Lord's Supper is a moment where it's a symbolic meal. It's a moment where we remember Jesus' death and resurrection for us. We remember that actually God doesn't accept us because we're good enough. God accepts us on the basis of Jesus' body and blood broken for us. Now, if you're actually not a follower of Jesus, and if you haven't kind of, you know, accepted Jesus by faith and you're trusting in him, then there's no pressure at all to kind of take part of something that isn't actually true for you. Right, we don't want to kind of make you feel coerced into doing something that's not for you. But I want to suggest this also, that there is an invitation there. That maybe today Jesus is actually inviting you to come and rest with him. As Jesus very famously said, he said, come to me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, and my burden is light. You know, as the host team come and start passing that around, I want to put that invitation before you. Yes, this is for you, student, high school, uni, whatever student, who always feels like you've just never done enough. You just want to keep pushing harder and harder and harder. You find it so hard to stop and rest. And it's for you, mum, who's got so much on your plate and you're always trying to keep everyone happy. Maybe you've got a part-time job. Maybe it's the kids, the young kids at home. Maybe it's your husband. Maybe there's so much there that you're trying to keep people happy that you can never stop and rest. And it's for you, dads out there, who feel like you carry the burdens of the world upon your shoulders, providing for your families, caring for them, leading for them, teaching them. Church, God invites us to rest. He invites us to our table. He invites us to remember that you can never do enough, but you don't need to because Jesus has done it for you. Friends, it's actually